If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book, because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk. Welcome to a special end of 2016 Tougher Minds podcast, where we're looking back on the last year, we're talking about the year ahead, and discussing one or two notable features of recent times that have a bearing and a relation to mental performance and well-being and resilience and more besides. I'm joined by Tougher Minds founder and managing director, Dr. John Finn, by Tougher Minds head of education, Andrew Foster, and by Professor Jim McKenna, consultant to Tougher Minds, and of course, from Leeds Beckett University. Welcome, gentlemen. Great to talk to you. I think we can start then by looking backwards, as it were, looking back at 2016 as we approach the year end. And one of the most recent developments, John, for Tougher Minds, I'll ask you, first of all, the release of a new specific website for business, and with it a new approach and some new programs for resilience skills in business.
Yeah, we know that managing stress has probably never been more important for businesses. I think it was a big IT company said that they've saved £1 million by just raising awareness about stress management strategies with their employees. And we've been working in that sector for a while now, both with the remit of helping people to manage stress, but also to be more productive. We have more interruptive lives than ever. We increasingly work with clients from the City of London, and we felt that having a specific website that showcased our work within the business context would be very useful. We've been working on that over a number of months, using things that we've developed, like our Elite Business Athlete program, our bite-sized resilience programs, to show businesses and their employees some simple and practical ideas about how they can get better at managing stress and being more productive. So yeah, we're very excited about that, and you know, already we're actually getting clients from the back of that. So there's obviously a great need and demand for those services.
The website's called resilienceskillsforbusiness.co.uk. It's up there now. You can see it, resilienceskillsforbusiness.co.uk. John, also, you've modified slightly, I believe, the type of courses and services and programs that Tougher Minds offers. Just a quick word about the different options that anyone might have who's interested in working with Tougher Minds.
Yeah, we're trying to give people the whole range from big keynote events, so that if they just want to help employees to understand about a certain theme, maybe about their brain a little bit more and how they can change habits and behaviours to be more helpful, we can provide that service, all the way through to much longer term programmes, so we can really work with people in an in-depth way, providing both one-to-one sessions and also workshop based sessions, working through our curriculum, looking at areas like how to boost motivation, how to manage confidence, how to concentrate more effectively, helping people to understand more about their brains and how habits are formed, and really working with them over a period of time that allow new habits to be developed. So yeah, we've got a whole range of new programs for business.
Jim, as someone who's worked not only with Tougher Minds, but in the area of lifestyle, as it were, how significant do you feel this now is a factor in business and broader society, I suppose? These sorts of challenges and issues.
Yeah, we know that resilience is an immense challenge now because there's so many ways of becoming inattentive and to become overwhelmed. And so what the programs are really all about, resilience is about the speed of your recovery. It's not to stop people getting knocked back, but these are the core skills that help people to get back on track. And I think it's really important that more and more people learn these skills, refine them and make them very productive in their context. So the skills are generic, but they have to be refined. And that's what they're learning, or what people are learning through these programs.
And what benefit might people see in their everyday life, in their daily existence, if they were more resilient and understood how they could engage in this type of mental management, if you want to call it that?
Well, one of the things that we see when people are short on resilience skills is they lose large parts of the day by being overwhelmed by whatever the events of the day are. When we see people who've got high resilience skills, they're able to compartmentalize those to see what the essential element is. So the emotional content of that becomes more managed and they get back on track better. So in a typical working day, if you said it was 8 hours, instead of losing two to being bothered and anxious about something, you retain those 2 hours. So you spend more time doing what you want to do.
And I suppose it's worth bringing you in at this point, Andrew, because I've clearly a big crossover between Tougher Minds education and business programs. But I imagine in your role as a teacher, that's like the education business, as it were. This type of approach not only has the positive effect and benefit we've seen for pupils in terms of performance and well-being, but for teachers and practitioners as well.
Absolutely, Andrew. We should never, as teachers, we should be mindful that we never stop having the opportunity to learn, and we've got to keep going with these things ourselves. I found it really helpful when speaking with pupils, also with working with teachers, with parents, to be able to, you know, give examples of how I've used Tougher Minds techniques myself. And exactly like Jim says, it doesn't mean that you become little Mr. or Miss Perfect. You have to keep persevering, and it's about getting back on the horse that bit quicker and getting that cumulative benefit over the course of the challenges that you're up against.
Okay, well, we can expect hopefully people to have a look at that over the forthcoming holiday period, and by all means send a question in on Twitter if you have any queries about the type of services Tougher Minds offer. At Tougher Minds is where you'll find the consultancy on Twitter, and resilienceskillsforbusiness.co.uk is the new website, so please do take a moment to check that out. Other highlights of 2016 for Tougher Minds have clearly been the continuing successful work in education. Most recently, the 12th of December at Greenwich University, you staged another successful event for parents, again for parents of children in two age groups, those facing GCSEs and A-levels, and then those around, let's call it the 11 plus age group, who may indeed be facing those type of entrance exams in certain parts of the country and in certain education authorities, and at that age as well, transitioning from a junior school environment to a senior school environment. So tell us a bit about that, John, first of all, if you would, about the event at Greenwich University and how that went.
Yes, an opportunity for people, parents and pupils who don't come to schools that run Tougher Minds programmes to engage in what we offer. And I think the takeaway in terms of feedback people gave is that they got a lot of simple and practical ideas that they can start to use, both to improve well-being and also secure resilience, but not the be-all and end-all in education, but also to get better exam results as well, which is often what we're trying to target when we're at school. So lots of happy customers and lots of other opportunities, you know, coming off the back of that. Got quite an exciting corporate social responsibility program coming off the back of that work, which we can't disclose just yet, but it looks like that will be coming off in 2017. So, you know, people see the need for this approach and they recognise that they don't get it as part of a normal school education. You know, so that's really good that, you know, we're able to help so many people with simple and practical ideas, maybe common sense ideas supported by good science, but things that people aren't typically doing as part of their day-to-day lives.
And Andrew, you've been part of several of these type of events before also. It must be interesting for you, I suppose, as someone who began their career as a teacher, maybe having less contact with parents, I imagine. I don't know, that might not be right, but this really is a new dimension, a new offer for families, I suppose.
Absolutely. Constant refrain that we're getting from parents is it just makes so much sense, and yet we didn't get it in school when we were when we were children. And to be honest, most children are at schools. I'd say pretty much every child who's at a school where Tough Minds isn't in the school, they're not getting explicitly taught how to manage their confidence, their concentration and their motivation as a matter of course. So it was brilliant that evening at University of Greenwich and other events that we've done to be able to give these young people who are very keen to do well the opportunity to learn how to manage their concentration, how to manage their motivation and their confidence. Just as no one will tell you those things aren't important, and yet 99% of schools are not explicitly teaching their pupils how to manage them.
Well, another successful feature of the year in education for Tougher Minds, of course, has been the successful work that's been ongoing with schools in both the fee-paying and state sector. Most notably, perhaps, St Bede's and St Joseph's Catholic College in Bradford in West Yorkshire, a real flagship project and a successful one at that. That's resulted in some regional publicity as well and a lot of recognition. Just tell us, for anyone who's not quite familiar with that, again, starting with you, Andrew, the headline remarks from that particular project and that particular piece of work.
Yeah, Andrew, the St Bede's and St Joseph programme, it's been really pleasing for everyone involved. We started working with the pupils and the parents and the staff involved in that programme just after January, start this year, and the progress that those pupils made in the time that we saw them was just remarkable. These were people who up to that point weren't perhaps fulfilling their potential at school, and the more that I worked with them, the more that they started to open up and say, hey, you know, there's potential in other areas that they could make more of. And that was a really pleasing thing. Yeah, the exam results, that's the headline, that's going to catch the eye, and they were fantastic. But on top of that, there's all sorts of benefits in terms of how they're just getting on better with their mums and dads, how they're pursuing their sport, making time to see their friends and putting the Xbox away for a bit of time. Those are real benefits as well, even if they don't fit on a spreadsheet just as easily as the exam results. So it's really pleasing. It fits with our core message of performance is important, but health and happiness are crucial too.
Well, sounds like good news for everyone, but bad news for Microsoft. But never mind about that. Microsoft Xbox, of course, if you didn't quite get the reference. But John, the successful work at St Bede's is just one of a number of schools, as I said, and you're now seeing an increased demand and an increased level of inquiry from schools in the state and private sector to work with Tougher Minds, I understand.
Yeah, we're working on more schools than ever. I think the need to offer young people simple and practical strategies that allow them to take more control over their development, over their progress. You know, we're very good at teaching young people subject-specific ideas in schools, but not necessarily broad, transferable, what we're starting to call fundamental life skills. And we're seeing that teenagers seem to be struggling more with an inability to manage themselves more than ever before. I think the onset of such great access to mobile technology, to social media, is a big problem there. We've got some proven and tried strategies that help people to deal with this more effectively. We've got a program that helps people to boost well-being, to be more resilient, but also actually to get better grades in every subject they're studying. And beyond that, to do better in things outside of school, because the skills they're getting from Tougher Minds are transferable. And more schools are seeing the evidence and being compelled to buy into the program themselves.
Well, it's all been a very busy, successful, and very exciting year for you, I'm sure, in the education sphere. And I've no doubt 2017 is set to be equally as busy and as vibrant and as successful for Tougher Minds. So it was great to look back on 2016 in that way, gents. Something that's happened away from specifically Tougher Minds in recent times, but is itself also part of a look back at past events, is, of course, the BBC's Sports Personality of the Year. It used to be called Sports Review in days gone by, I think, but now called Sports Personality of the Year. And this year, 2016, won for the third time by current world number one tennis star Andy Murray, and winner of an Olympic gold medal at the Rio Olympics, and, of course, a Wimbledon winner as well. So a stellar year for Andy Murray, and really the moment at which he reached the world number one status was very significant in British sport and in British tennis. And I think members of the public recognise that, and he won the popular vote. Worth remembering, it's a popular vote nowadays, and won that very coveted title, the Sports Personality of the Year. Second was the triathlete Alistair Brownlee, and third I think we could call him evergreen equestrian rider, Nick Skelton. So he had some pretty stiff competition against some fairly compelling candidates. But yeah, Andy Murray prevailed. And I know all of you, John, Jim and Andrew, believe that Andy Murray is quite a fitting and appropriate example to cite in the context of people, when people are thinking about resilience and self-improvement and developing their own well-being and their own mental management, if you like, that Andy Murray has Andy Murray's story is something people can learn a lot from. I wonder if Jim, you could start us off by giving us your impressions of what you can take from Andy Murray's rise to this exalted position now.
Well, one of the most important things to take from that story is how long it takes to rise to the top. He's persisted with setbacks, not winning, not fulfilling potential as people might have it. He's made good changes in and around himself in terms of who's helping him off court. I think he's responded extremely well to the emotional demands. When he's got close to winning, he's become much more in control of his emotional regulation, both on court and off court. He doesn't break down crying all the time anymore when he gives an interview after. And I think there's a very substantial thing that's gone on in his life beyond the tennis, is that he's become a dad. And that's a very important. It gives people a strong sense of purpose when you buy in on things like that. And he can see a bigger meaning. And whenever you find big meaning in something, the hassles of what drive other people up the wall become way, way easier to handle. So having a big meaning, what we would call a big, hairy, audacious goal, he now wants to be a great dad. That makes everything else much easier. And there's a really important lesson for us all there to keep our focus on the big meaning.
John, someone who's been involved in specific sports performance work, as well as your work with Tougher Minds earlier on, in your career, specifically in football, but I'm sure it transfers to other sports too. What's your take on Andy Murray's development and the sort of processes and growth that Jim's just outlined?
Well, I think, to focus in on the beginning of Murray's career, where he was written off, and people approached him with a very fixed mindset. It's interesting, actually, at the moment that India had just been walloped. England had been walloped in India in the cricket, and the sort of the commentators are talking about how some of the young guys who are essentially playing their first Test matches, what their chances are of having a very successful Test career. You know, some of the guys have been written off very quickly. What they can do now does not predict what they can do in the future. What they practice between now and the future will predict what they can do in the future. And this is, you know, it's the myth of talent, isn't it? Is that, you know, Andy Murray, if he was going to be able to be the best tennis player in the world, then he should have shown those qualities when he was 21. But what we're seeing now is it doesn't work like that. If we're going to be the best, it's about progression, 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 progression. And some people just can't tolerate the sort of effort that that takes. Whereas, you know, Murray has risen above that quite dramatically, because it's very hard to do. And it wasn't just one area of his game that he had to develop in order to secure becoming the best tennis player in the world in an era where there are some, you know, possibly it's the most competitive era to be the best tennis player in the world. There are a number of different areas, both physiologically and psychologically. You know, and again, there's a notion that you just can't learn how to be mentally tough. Well, Murray's showing that he can. And in fact, Eddie Jones is blowing that trumpet at the moment as well, the England coach, and talking about how he's making the England rugby union team mentally tough. I think it's just a fantastic story. You know, Dweck talks about the growth mindset, fixed mindset, and we have a real-life example here in Andy Murray. And it's a great message for young people. What you can do now does not predict what you can do in the future. How you practice and what you practice in between now and the future will predict what you can do in the future. So, very interesting.
And Andrew, as not only someone who works in Tougher Minds, but also still in a teaching role, and specifically in a sports coaching role with school pupils, I understand you've also had an opportunity to try to really practically implement that kind of approach in a sporting context.
If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book, because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk.
That's absolutely right, Andrew. With the rugby teams that I've coached, it became pretty clear that what those players are thinking is as important as what they are doing. In fact, it has a massive impact on what they're doing. So that ability to regulate their emotions, to harness them when they're useful, and to respond when they're not, is absolutely key. I thought it was interesting that Andy Murray mentioned when he was accepting the award that now that he's a dad, he goes home after a defeat, and it doesn't seem like the biggest thing in the world anymore, and that he thinks that's been beneficial. That's interesting, because it's certainly something that we had to instill into the players, the habit of not allowing themselves to be overwhelmed by setbacks, thinking, right, what's positive, how can we take things forward? So yeah, a big life-changing event. And like parenthood can have a positive impact, but what I've seen is that you can explicitly teach young people how to manage themselves and reduce the impact of these setbacks upon them, allow them to be more successful, first of all, on the sports field, which is great in itself, but then they can transfer that to other aspects of their life too. And that's really pleasing.
I just wonder, John, to close off this little segment about Andy Murray, would you bestow on him a Tougher Minds title, if you like, a Tougher Minds award as the, not world number one tennis player, but world number one at practice and preparation and dedication, something like that?
I think Djokovic is not bad either, and we'll see what happens in his career going forwards. And Nadal, I think maybe his body's let him down a little bit, but I think all those guys at the top, they've got these skills. They might have different names and titles for them, but they've learned how to manage themselves and regulate themselves. And I think they've typically found a personal coach that's allowed them to do that. What we're offering is a framework that works across contexts, across ability groups, an insight into these areas that Murray's been able to conquer for the moment, and Djokovic certainly been able to conquer previously, that everybody can use. So yeah, I certainly think he deserves some award. I don't know if I give it all to him just yet. We'll see where he's at this time next year, but yeah, he's done well.
Very good, very interesting stuff. Well, a key component, anyone who's been listening to the first 25 minutes or so of this podcast, something we've mentioned with great regularity is the word well-being, and I want to come on now to talk about that in greater detail, because it does seem to be growing in prominence, more people recognising its power, its importance, its relevance in modern society. And again, it's a key component of Tougher Minds programmes in education and in business. And John, if you would, just give us an overview of how Tougher Minds sets out its understanding and its reference when it comes to well-being.
Well, we're beginning by, the first thing we're asking people to do is get their sleep, their diet, their exercise right. We know that all three of those things contribute to better function in the hippocampi area of the brain, which is responsible for producing new brain cells. New brain cells seems to be pretty vital for lots of important things that we do. Maybe surprisingly, they're very important for managing stress, because maybe if you have a challenging situation you're facing and you have lots of new brain cells to manage that challenge, you can think about the challenging situation in quite a flexible way. You don't get stuck in the rut. You don't get stuck in a negative thinking loop. So sleep and exercise is where we start. And then, you know, we're trying to help people to pay attention to things that are helpful for them, ultimately. And we call that HAC, helpful attention control. And all our strategies are feeding back into the ideas of getting your attention onto what is helpful for you. So really, from our perspective, and you know, there are three components to our outcomes, which are health, happiness and performance. We're trying to use our sleep, diet, exercise and our brain HAC strategies to help people to get that health and happiness foundation. So that's some of the insights and language that we use in our programs.
And Jim, it's perhaps something people might not immediately have clicked or realised or thought of, that there is this connection between a good lifestyle and good mental performance. People might have even disassociated the two in the past.
Yeah, that's very much the case, Andrew. What we understand is that the body affects the mind, and that in a very nice little neat feedback loop, is that the mind affects the body. So we need to be addressing both those mechanisms. If we want the body to function well, we need to think about our minds. And if we want our minds to function well, we need to think about our bodies. So there's an inevitable loop here. And if you think you can do one without the other, you're wrong and you're going to get into trouble.
And again, you as someone who's worked not only with Tougher Minds, but in the broader lifestyle education sphere, how easy is it for people to make small changes and make do practical things which deliver results for them in this area, would you say?
Yeah, I think you've You've really hit the nail on the head there, Andrew, with easy and small, because those are things we can sustain. The challenges in behaviour change when we try to do something big is it's so easy to be overwhelmed by the scale of what we're trying to do. So if you start with small and stay with small and keep doing those things, you're starting to get a real understanding of how you're rewiring your own brain. And that's building from ordinary behavior into routines, and those routines then have a chance of becoming habits, which makes them reasonably easy to do. With, you know, it doesn't cost you very much to do those sorts of things, and that's what we're looking for all the time. How can you make something you want to have happen but doesn't? How can you make that easier to do so it becomes what you do routinely? So an example we would have with students, as an example, or pupils, is how can you study more? How can you read more in a day? Well, don't try and do 2 hours in one go. Build it up over 10-minute blocks. So that's a nice, simple, easy kind of way of dealing with things. And we're looking at those kind of strategies all the time so that people can satisfy their own needs. And that makes them really good self-coaches. And that's where we're heading.
And Andrew, Jim's alluded there to a very practical method of delivery, or a practical routine people can implement in an education context. And again, obviously working with John in the first early stages of developing Tougher Minds program at Colliff School, where you were head of GCSE performance, you've seen the type of effect that change can have, I'm sure.
Absolutely. It's a whole well-being story. It's been really pleasing with older pupils, students, I might say, in sixth form. Currently, the focus there's on year seven pupils, and they are showing a greater awareness of not just the need to address sleep, diet and exercise, but practical techniques to successfully do that than you see amongst many adults. You know, it's brilliant to hear 11, 12-year-old boys and girls coming in and saying, I realised I wasn't getting enough sleep. I realised that my diet wasn't great. I realised that I wasn't getting exercise like I should do in the regular way that I should do. And I did this about it, and now I feel a lot better. Because we absolutely want them to go on and perform in terms of academics, in terms of their extracurricular activities. But the crucial thing is that they are happy. They're happy now, and that they're happy in the future. And that's what Tougher Minds helps them with, helps them do things that are going to help them be happier in the course of the next day or the next week. And it also helps them to do the things that they might not feel like in the moment, but are going to result in them having more happy, more fulfilled lives as, you know, they go into adulthood. So, yeah, it's just been a fantastic thing to be involved in.
And John, just again to close off on the discussion of well-being, we've I think successfully established then that it's this lifestyle framework that Tougher Minds shows people and guides people towards, a sleep, diet and exercise, and then from that foundation to build on. But in the same way that you're fielding more inquiries and getting more contact from schools in all sectors of education, it's fair to say, I believe, that well-being is a bit of a key word and a buzzword that you're hearing from the business world as well when they make contact with you.
Yeah, exactly that. And there was a story on the BBC website today showing that one of the biggest computer companies in the world stated they think they've saved about £1 million a year by giving their employees stress management workshops in absenteeism. The saying in business, you know, in high performing businesses, what got you here last year, what got you here this year? You know, no one's making any more hours in the day. So in order to keep our performance at an upward trajectory, we've got to take care of our well-being. We've got to take care of our sleep, our diet, our exercise. But we don't in the Western world. You know, we're deprived well, we're not doing any one of those three areas particularly well, it seems, if we look at the big data. So, yeah, definitely a big need. And I think that if we call it stress management, that's also problematic as well. And what businesses really like about Tougher Minds is Tougher Minds, the term, but also, you know, resilience and resilience training. And I think, yeah, it's very of the time, this idea. And I can only see more people buying into the idea of needing to do this because they see the benefits of their colleagues. You know, and people see benefits of this very quickly. Within after you know an hour and a half session, they'll come back the week after and tell you, "Yep, I just tried this thing and it just made so much of an impact on my working day." Also, outside of the work context, Andrew, but connected to the work is family life. And again, what businesses see is their middle managers, who are getting more and more responsibility in the workplace. Also, they're also the age where their families are extending. So essentially, your middle management is getting squeezed in the business sector, certainly in places like the city. So again, these skills are more are needed more than ever. And especially if we look at the teenage story around well-being and stress management, that seems to be very problematic at the moment. So if you're a parent and also a middle manager, you've got all the pressures from home. And the problem that your children might be facing, then also you've got that in the work with the people that you're managing and what their families might be facing, and you are literally getting squeezed. So you need some simple and practical skills to help you to manage, you know, through these difficulties. And we have a very compelling solution.
Yes, well, a reminder that you can see details of all Tougher Minds work and its programs on the three websites that are now live. Tougherminds.co.uk is the main website. Then there is the specific resilience skills websites for families and business, resilienceskillsforfamilies.co.uk and resilienceskillsforbusiness.co.uk, two distinct separate websites there, very much worth checking out and having a look at to get a broad idea. And make contact with Tougher Minds. You can also, of course, follow Tougher Minds on Twitter. Just very simply, @TougherMinds is the Twitter handle. Well, to conclude the podcast, gentlemen, we're going to ask you to help people look ahead to 2017 as we approach the end of the year. You just mentioned, John, what got you here. This year won't do the same next year, so let's try and help people. I wonder if we could ask you to provide one tip for people, one tip each perhaps, or maybe you have more than one if you do, great. So tips then for people that they can perhaps put into action or prepare or start to think about over the holiday break, the Christmas holiday break that's coming for many people, and how they can get themselves ready to be better in 2017, whatever they do. And let's kick things off with you, Jim.
I think the one recommendation I would offer is for people to focus on the successes that they've had rather than recording failure. It's very easy to remember that on January the 1st you didn't go to the gym, but actually it'd be far better that if you said I went for a walk 10 minutes in the morning, well done, record that, and then have a walk in the afternoon, another 10 minutes, record that. And it doesn't matter that you didn't go to the gym. It's focus on what you've done well, and the more days you do that, the better it is. And don't worry about the failures. Keep going back to what you can be successful at.
So perhaps over if you've got some slack time, then over the Christmas period, look back at 2016 and think what you've done well.
Absolutely, yeah. We thrive off reward. That's what's really important. And the more we focus on what we're no good at, the worse it gets for us. We get into a downward spiral. What we're trying to do is build upward spirals for ourselves. It's our responsibility to be our personal best. And sometimes circumstances aren't that great, but we can still do something. So even if it is just 5 minute blocks of walking, that still counts.
John, what would your tip or tips be for people?
Well, I'm going to build on Jim's point. And I think that reflecting back into 2016 and just writing down three things that you did really well that might not have noticed otherwise, but if you're committed to paper, you're really making your brain pay attention to it. So yeah, it's an extension of Jim's point, but think about the things that you've done well over 2016, even if the outcomes haven't been what you wanted. You know, reflect on the effort you've put in as well, but write some things down, otherwise your ape brain will dominate your thinking.
And perhaps maybe I know you have spoken extensively in the past about the Tougher Minds performance planner in various contexts, and that in some ways is a far more sophisticated version of this kind of self-watching that you've described. But is it perhaps worth also considering something that you might want to work on to improve? Is that a component of that? Could that be an accompaniment to positively with weighted reflection, as you call it?
Yeah, if you can get three things that have gone well, then you can write down something to work on. If you can't think of anything that's gone well, then don't write down something you want to improve on. Otherwise, you might overwhelm yourself. But yeah, 3-1 is a good ratio. You know, it's good to have the goal as well. And the holiday period that's coming up is a great time to reflect on the old and what you might want to achieve in the new year. So this is a good time to do both. But again, commit them to paper, because that's going to help us to both really appreciate the helpful things, but also work on gives a better chance to working towards the thing that we've identified to work on if it's written down nice and specific.
And Andrew, how would you characterise this opportunity to think about doing things better, or an opportunity to use a tip or a technique over this period? What would you contribute?
I suppose one of the most important things I've learned through working with Tougher Minds, being the head of education for Tougher Minds, is we need to think about habit, because that's how things change in the long term, is by changing our habits. A lot of people go into 2017 with a lot of good intentions and some really good aims. They might well have reflected well, but then they don't have a plan to make those aims, those new behaviours, a habit. So thinking hard about when this new behaviour is going to take place, how often, who's it going to take place with, are there other people who can help us build this habit, what the foreseeable challenges are, and then at the end of January perhaps going, well, what have I learned about how this works in practice? What's getting in the way? How can I persevere and keep going until these skills that we're practicing become habits, become things that we do without them needing a great deal of energy, effort, willpower from us, just becomes part of our normal behaviour, part of our habit. So how can we build habits would be my key thing to... Well, a key thing that I'm going to be thinking about myself, and anyone listening to this, they're welcome to do that too.
Well, gentlemen, a fascinating 40 minutes or thereabouts. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your insight. Great to look back at some of the positives for Tougher Minds during 2016, and also fantastic to look ahead with such already renewed vigour to 2017. And talk about some of the ways in which people can approach the year with confidence to improve and perform better and feel better, whatever they're involved in. Thank you very much again for listening, and we hope to see you and hear from you again in 2017.
If you want to fulfill your potential or help other people fulfill their potential so you can feel great and get the rewards and respect you deserve, then I want to give you a free physical copy of my new best-selling book, because you deserve to know the truth. The most important things for fulfilling your potential are not tips, tricks, hacks, therapy, coaching, meditation, breathwork, goal setting, journaling, or finding your why. I know it sounds irrational because we're so used to hearing about using these things to help us fulfill our potential. But these approaches are outdated and ineffective, and they are based on a big lie.
To find out more and get your free physical copy of Dr. John Finn's best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic, go to tougherminds.co.uk.